as to the statute and the rules of the state. And that's a one-time decision, and unless there's a dramatic change, you already know, gee, the Oregon Board of Pharmacy says California's okay.
My suspicion is that you'd have real Commerce Clause problems if the Oregon Board of Pharmacy were leaving it to itself to decide which other pharmacies it thought were appropriate for Oregon citizens, absent a fact pattern that gave grounds for concern about health and safety. I do not know an answer to be, and I would like to submit an answer for the record on territories. I simply don't know. I don't believe any of our members are located in territories.
Most U.S. statutes also refer to the territory.
I understand the concept.
They're thrown in there.
I understand the concept. I have no sense of the quality of their licensure requirements. I'll have to get that for you on the record.
No, you don't have to do that. That's okay. We could pretend it's Florida.
We do have members in Florida, and I would respectfully suggest that the Florida standards are substantially equivalent.
I can guarantee you that the members of the Florida legislature would tell you it's the best in the country.
All right.
The ones that, Florida's okay. I thought you were talking about South Carolina for a minute.
Representative Clark, then Representative Bell.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to get your response to Representative Maddox's earlier question again in a little different context. As I understand his earlier question, he said, what if we said substantial compliance? And your answer was, well, maybe that limits the burden on the one hand, but it also probably limits the benefit on the other, so that doesn't resolve anything one way or the other. I guess my refined, or the refined way to ask that question is, what if you had a provision in Senate Bill 147 that said, if there is an absolute conflict between a provision of Oregon law and a provision of the home state law of wherever you are, then if there's that conflict, you can get by with substantial compliance. Does that help any?
Well, the problem is that by deferring to the home state law, you're almost conceding the relative unimportance of the domestic law.
No, I don't think you would. I think you'd be trying to make the statute constitutional.
I understand that, but in fact, in the process of saying, well, you have a conflict, we will defer to the other state's law, you're basically saying we don't think this requirement, in fact, when push comes to shove, is that important for basic health and safety. Otherwise, we'd insist on it.
Well, I'm not sure that I'm saying that you would defer. I'm saying that you would pass muster if the other state's law was in substantial compliance with.
I guess my respectful suggestion is that is what we have now, at least in the 50 states.
Right. Well, then you have no problem with us putting it in the Oregon law.
Particularly if you were to spell out that the 50 states are now in substantial compliance.
Oh, yeah, right.
Mr. Chairman, one of the things that we've discussed with the board on several occasions, please put in the statute exactly what it is you want, out-of-state pharmacies to comply with.
Well, how are we burdening you?
Have you, I don't imagine, but I've been to a lot of different states. It's much easier, it's much more open in a legislative forum to discuss and have oversight to opposing points of view than it is in an administrative hearing before a regulatory authority, which is in fact peopled by your competitors. That's why we want it in the statute rather than by rule.
Oh, well, we have that same complaint as legislators on the water policy that seems to be imposed by the Water Division or LCDC or whomever. We lose that battle regularly. I mean, why are you different than me?
You only have to do it in one state.
Well, yeah. But I imagine it, for your agitation here today, you're probably getting a lot better compensation than most of us in the room. Here or there, Representative Bell has waiting patiently.
Yeah. I don't mean to be disrespectful to our national representatives, but in light of the fact that we might be called away any time, if there are Oregon residents opposed to this bill, I would like to see them have their time.
No one else signed up that's opposed to besides these two gentlemen.
Could we ask the question, are there any Oregon residents here at all who are opposed to this bill?
Oregon residents aren't really affected except as consumers, and once again, consumers tend to be underrepresented.
Sir, I know why I asked the question, and I want the answer if you don't mind. Are there any Oregon residents who are opposed to this bill?
She's talking about it.
Okay, there's one.
Representative Bell.
Mr. Chairman,
this question. For instance, we have about 147,000 patients and customers in the state of Oregon. This bill will have no effect on their service. However, in other states, for instance, in Wisconsin last year, where we had 80,000 customers and and patients, they had an out-of-state licensure bill that would require our Missouri pharmacy to comply in all instances with Wisconsin state law when Missouri law met or exceeded every requirement. But it would also include us to fly our pharmacists to Wisconsin. We alerted our patients what was at risk, and we understand that there were something like 17,000 letters written. Now, unfortunately, that situation doesn't prevail in the state of Oregon with respect to the organization I represent and the patients it serves.
Ancora?
Representative Mannix, briefly, if you would.
Right now, we have no oversight authority over out-of-state pharmacies under the current definition in the law, as I understand it. And so this is an effort to give us some oversight authority. You have no problem with registration.
Correct.
And you're concerned, of course, with having to comply totally with all of the procedural and technical requirements. On the other hand, you're concerned if we say substantially equivalent that somehow someone's going to do a number on you. Well, what if we put in substantially equivalent and require a report 2 years from now to make sure that no one's doing numbers on anybody?
Okay. Sir.
Go ahead. That was a question.
Thank you, sir. I guess the way California addressed that was that, in fact, they set specific standards, for example, with patient consultation. I guess what the concern is, and again, it's a Commerce Clause type of concern, leaving requirements vague. And in fact, in California, what they specify is that one must have patient consultation during specified hours of business, at least 40 hours per week. That kind of clear requirement is a much lower burden if you're serving a state, particularly given that it's a very reasonable requirement. Our standards of practice would require at least as much now. That is a much lower burden under the Commerce Clause than to call for substantial compliance and then force, as Mr. Willard has suggested, companies to go and argue the details, the arcane details, before the Board of Pharmacy and try to establish that, in fact, what they're doing is substantial compliance?
I see what you mean.
Okay, but you have to understand at the same time, you haven't had a problem yet. You're giving us a hypothetical. If someone starts to screw around with you in an unconstitutional manner in the way they draft rules and promulgate them, then you can come back to this legislative body or you can go to court and have it declared unconstitutional. Now, let me ask you one question. How many states have had laws like this, or registration laws, or, well, the cases you referred to as being challenged or being discussed by Trinity, how long have those laws been in effect? They passed a year ago or 10 years ago? Or
states have been dealing with this issue.
You're talking about the ones that have been challenged?
Yeah.
The only one is Arkansas. Arkansas sued an out-of-state pharmacy saying that you are in violation of our out-of-state pharmacy act.
But how long had the laws been on the books?
It had been on the books since 1983. The action was brought in 1987 or early 88. The out-of-state pharmacy appeared at the temporary restraining order hearing and said, we're here, we don't accept your jurisdiction, and they filed a motion to remove the court to federal district court, District 7, where it languished for 2.5 years while the interested parties came to settlement. So it has not gotten that far.
Okay, and my concern is that I like to deal with issues that are substantive, but you're raising issues that an appellate court in this country has yet to rule upon, and you show two attorney general opinions that seem to discuss it, and you talk about something that might happen to you, and right now you're unregulated in the state of Oregon. And, you know, I appreciate your concerns, but you got to show us something, or you got to come back at a time when you've actually been, as we all experienced in our careers, mistreated under the law in an unconstitutional manner, or unfairly, or beyond the scope of what was intended. So I appreciate the discussion that's gone on now for about half an hour about hypotheticals, and you can't bring to me a case that says that this kind of conduct is clearly unconstitutional because we haven't done anything yet to you.
Well, wait, sir, with all respect, if you look at the draft regulation and the outline of the regulation, they talk about complying with Oregon generic substitution Oregon controlled substances laws. What we will have to do then, and again, it's the classic word for lawyers, is go back to the 14 states where the pharmacies are located, run the details of those state laws against the details of the Oregon requirements, and then come up to you and say the following pharmaceuticals, in fact, don't comply. That's precisely the kind of burden that can be avoided by a registration statute that gives Oregon the power of oversight to know who is shipping what into this state. And
but it gives no control.
It gives control.
No quality control, no nothing.
I was going to say, I can understand the difficulty of not having a standardized process and set of rules from state to state, but it's certainly nothing new. I mean, we've had a fracas here about beer labeling, you know, labels on beer, auto sale procedures, lemon laws, health and food packaging and so forth, where various states have gone their way, and Oregon on occasion has gone its way. So I have sympathy for it, but there's, I don't know how many scores of various standards we have in Oregon law that national distribution networks have had to adjust to or decide not to market in Oregon, one of the two, and we certainly hope you don't decide the latter, but it seems to me that it's not unreasonable. We do it in lots of other areas, and Mr. Willard's comment that the AARP people would not be affected by this bill, but you're concerned about the precedent in other states.
Right.
You know, there's not much we can do about what other states do, but if you, I would really encourage you, if this bill passes, that you work closely with the Oregon Board of Pharmacy in developing the most reasonable rules possible. They have not been unreasonable to my knowledge. And if something happens between now and the next session that is, you think is unfair and unreasonable, this forum can then consider legislative change.
Representative Bryan, I just in response to that, I understand the point from which you're coming. We would like some guidance. I mean, what I was asking for, and I think Representative Clark responded to it, was some guidance on what you do when there are conflicts. What do you do? I mean, you're faced with kind of a catch-22 choice.
Isn't that a business decision every business person has to make when they do business in more than one state, though?
Representative,
we've been doing business for 30 years, and these things have been coming up very quickly as mail service pharmacies have taken more of the market.
Representative Mannix, I guess I'd like to respond to you and also to Representative Bell, and I do apologize earlier for my interruption. That is when the Oregon citizens will be affected. When suddenly the price goes up because of the costs of compliance with multiple requirements, people won't come back to the legislature. These are businesses. They will figure out ways to deal with multiple compliance. At some point, costs go up, and at some point, Oregon employers stop offering pharmacy benefits to Oregon consumers because the price has gone up. There is a subtext, Mr. Willard alluded to it, in a number of states. There has been a serious problem with retail druggists who perceive mail service pharmacy as offering a high quality but lower cost alternative, particularly for employer benefit plans. And when we're dealing with matters of cost, yes, there are business decisions made, and the end result is, and it's inarticulate. Today's USA Today, the whole back page has to do with spiraling health care costs.
Okay, I'm going to have to interrupt you. We're taking too much time here. Representative Bell, one last question. I want to move to another one.
Kind of a wrap-up. You mentioned this generic substitution law, and I don't know if you know, but maybe the Oregonians are so proud of that. This is something that we wanted. It's sort of like our bottle bill that we were willing to pay for, and it did have some effects on interstate business and that sort of thing. And as I view what we have done in this session, when there are different regulations in different states, we work toward model acts or interstate agreements so that we can come, you know, have boards of pharmacy work towards similar agreements. But they don't get into those agreements if there are particular parts of it that they feel strongly about. So I would be real hesitant to, you know, to ask the Oregonians to back off on their standards, you know, to blend into a more universal kind of model until they were ready to do that.
Point of view, Representative Bell, Mr. Chairman. any pharmacy in the country, I respectfully could comply with the Oregon generic drug substitution law. There's no formulary. It's permissive. It's a one-liner form. It is perhaps the most forward-looking and most openly in favor of greater utilization of generic drugs of any law in the country. It wouldn't present a compliance problem for a pharmacy located in another state.
I got the feeling from
but
him.
But the problem is one, once again, has to lay out that law, lay out the other laws, figure out what the requirements are, and the problem, once again, is it isn't just the state of Oregon. It is not just the home state plus Oregon state. It is complying with the laws of each of the states were they to go this route. And that's what adds the burden that ultimately drives up costs substantially.
Appreciate that. Thank you very much. We also hire out-of-state attorneys to do business in other states, too, to make sure we comply with the laws of those states. Go ahead. We appreciate you coming. Mr. Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
The only reason I'm rushing is because we got this major bill on the House floor, and any moment now we'll be called to the House floor to vote, and we want to...
Representative Cease would have to stop talking.
Representative Cease would have to stop talking first, but...
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bruce Bishop, representing Kaiser Permanente. Kaiser Permanente is responsible for providing comprehensive medical services to approximately 300,000 Oregonians and 70,000 residents of Washington. We do that through three clinics and pharmacies that operate in Washington State and through approximately 15 pharmacies that operate in Oregon. Our concern with Senate Bill 147 is that it may be possible to construe the language on page 2, starting at line 26, to require that we would register our Washington-based Washington pharmacies with the Oregon Board of Pharmacy, even if it was not a mail-order pharmacy. And the question is whether the clause, with facilities located within or out of this state, modifies only mail-order vendor, or if it also modifies pharmacy, nursing home, shelter home, convalescent home, extended care facility, drug abuse treatment center, penal institution, hospital, family planning clinic, retail store, wholesaler, et cetera.
Chairman.
Representative Bryan, excuse me.
Thank you. Pardon me, Mr. Bishop. Is your question then, if you have one of your clinics in Vancouver and an Oregon resident goes there for services and is dispensed a drug in Vancouver, Washington, and then comes home, whether that type of activity...
Whether that would be sufficient dispensing to a resident of the state that would trigger the requirement that we be licensed in...
Well, the way I read line 28 says drugs within the state. If it's distributed to an Oregon resident out of the state, I wouldn't think it would.
The question of what constitutes dispensing, delivery, or distribution?
If you're mailing it into Oregon, you would...
If a Kaiser member picks up a prescription in a Vancouver clinic, for example, is that a sufficient transaction to require us to register that Washington pharmacy with the Oregon board? We think that that's not what's intended, and in fact that the language with facilities located within or out of the state only modifies mail order vendors, but the way it's constructed, it's unclear just what the scope of the language would be, and it could be construed to mean that any hospital located within or outside of the state that's engaged in dispensing to Oregon residents might be subject to the registration requirements.
Okay. Anything further?
No, that's our only concern, that the scope of the measure be limited so that it not apply to those Washington pharmacies.
Thank you, Mr. Bishop. For the witnesses on this bill, we're going to go ahead and open a work session on Senate Bill 147.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bryan.
Just a very quick question of Mrs. Vanderveer. Is it, as a requester of the bill, would it be accurate to say that the Board of Pharmacy would not intend to trigger the registration in this case we've just discussed, where you have a Vancouver hospital that is handing the medication to someone in Vancouver? That's not your intention to bring them into
That's correct.
This?
Your assessment of it was absolutely correct. It's where the the prescription is dispensed is the critical factor.
Right.
If it's mailed to you in your home in Portland, then it becomes dispensed in Portland. But if it's given to you in Vancouver, then it is not. And actually, we have a situation right now where there is a Vancouver pharmacy that is supplying a nursing home in Portland and is not complying with one of our regulations that is creating a real bunch of turmoil in Portland, because they very blatantly have said to us, we don't have to do that. And it's an Oregon statute that they are ignoring, not one of our rules.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
May I ask your question also?
Sure.
I've got to throw out a limitation clause and ask you what your reaction is. What if we put in the following limitation in an appropriate part of the statute? In regulating mail order vendors with facilities located only outside of this state, the board shall adopt regulations which require professional standards which are substantially equivalent to those applied to other drug outlets within this state.
So it would, in effect, define what kind of rulemaking authority we could have.
It would say there'd be substantial equivalence of professional standards rather than identical compliance, for example.
I don't have any problem with that, except that I don't think there's a problem there anyway. I don't know that there's anything that you actually need to address, because as a testimony previously indicated, there are very similar standards around the country. There are only a few places where it is in variance, and one of those is an expiration date and quantity on a label, easy to comply with, and relating to the state of Arkansas.
But you see, what I'm getting at is, in terms of a Commerce Clause argument, if we've put into the legislation mm-hmm. this kind of a statement, and then your rules follow that kind of a standard, I think we're in a good position to say that, hey, you know, we've allowed some variation, we're not totally closing the door here, but you're going to have to substantially comply with our standards.
I would think that would be okay.
It's a litigation bumper. Yeah.
My concern is that, Representative Maggs, you're right, because what you're doing is you're putting the case law requirement in the statute, which as soon as these folks step over the line and do something like this.
You're worried about amending this and then having to get concurrence?
Well, yeah. Plus, I think what you ask them to do is like asking them to go ahead and obey the law. Don't require these people to do anything substantially different than what they're required to do by other states. I think if they came into court and challenged it and said, Oregon is doing this to us to protect their own little industry, and they have no substantial safety reason or anything to do it, and they do a rule that does that to these out of state, then we're in trouble. But I don't know if we want to lay the constitutional case law in statute that says that as long as you stay within the substantially equivalent, you're safe. Well, we all know that.
Well, the alternative might be someone arguing someday and suing them for not requiring identical standards for out-of-staters. Someone in-state saying, hey, you've got to apply the identical standards to any out-of-state operator. And if they don't have a fudge factor in the statute, they can't defend themselves by saying, well, we don't have to require identical standards for out-of-staters. The legislature said substantially equivalent was okay. I'm just throwing it out. I mean,
Mr. Chair.
Well, Representative Clark.
Right. I support Representative Mannix's proposal.
Okay, because I think you're, well, I don't know what we're doing here.
I understand, but we're
trying to tell this woman how to behave constitutionally, and we do this in every bill. We never get it out of the building.
Mr. Chair. My concern,
Brian.
I understand where the suggestion is coming from, but substantially equivalent is the omission of expiration date substantial? If they comply and everywhere else, but they just don't want to do that, but the people we've asked to set policy in this area say that it's important to Oregonians to have expiration dates. I mean, I don't know if that would be considered, you know, we're into this big argument, what's substantially equivalent?
Well, Mr.
Why don't you move the language and we'll just do her?
First, I will move that language, and I'll provide it to council. To the motion?
To the motion, Representative.
I think that what they can do in their own rules is they can, or they could say on a case-by-case basis, anyone can raise the point, they'll review it, they'll decide whether or not that's substantially equivalent. They can either identify rules which must be identically followed, or they can just say on a case-by-case basis, we'll review it, and we can enter an administrative order or ruling as they reach the issue. I like giving them a standard in statute, so I do move that amendment.
He does move the amendment. Any further discussion from any member of the committee? And there's objection to that. Representative Bell, do you object? Okay, so on the amendment, we'll have the clerk will please call the roll. Those voting in favor will say aye, and Representative Maxman, those voting no will say no.
Representatives Bryan?
No.
Clark?
Yes.
Edmondson?
Yes.
Johnson? Mannix?
Yes.
Miller? Bell?
No.
Chair Baum?
Votes no. The motion fails.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Bryan.
I'd move Senate Bill 147, A engrossed unamended, to the full committee due pass.
Representative Bryan moves House Senate Bill 147, unamended, to the full committee due pass recommendation. Discussion of that motion, Representative Mannix.
Question for the Board of Pharmacy representative. In applying this bill, if it becomes law, are you going to be requiring identical compliance? This will be a question now as to your intent. Or are you going to be allowing some fudge factor for someone who has to follow a different procedure somewhere so that they are substantially equivalent with your standards? Substantially
it would
equivalent.
Have to be. I recognize that there were some instances where you couldn't have exactly equivalent rules. This issue came up with Arkansas Board, and in fact, when I asked them what kind of situation they'd been in, I talked to them at some length on this. And
can you give
me
a yes or no just to save
I'm
a little
sorry.
Time?
Okay. Yeah. Yes, we
Thank
would
you.
Not require the same standards.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bryan.
As a further record, as established by Representative Mannix, just to clarify in line 27 and 28 that an out-of-state drug outlet, which is not, is not covered in this if they're not actually dispensing, delivering, or distributing drugs within the state. And I'm referring specifically to the testimony we had from Kaiser, where if they're distributing to Oregon residents, but it's the distribution is occurring out of state, that they're not drug into the net here.
Right. Before we run off, Representative Mannix, we will have a vote on this, okay? And make sure that we're after substantial compliance here. We don't want to nitpick them. We don't want our own people nitpicking us. We're not nitpicking them. So take that in mind, okay? Thank you, Representative Clark. We appreciate your comments. Any further discussion on the motion? Clerk will please call the roll.
Representatives Bryan?
Aye.
Clark?
No.
Edmondson?
Aye.
Johnson? Mannix?
Aye.
Miller? Bell?
Aye.
Chair Baum?
Votes yes. Senate Bill 147 is forwarded to the full committee due pass recommendation. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 147.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Clark.
I will reserve the right to vote yes in the full committee after I review the AG opinions.
Okay. Representative, you can confer with staff. So we're going to, anybody going to stay around?
Yeah, they said they'd call on that bill. Well, they must have.
No call.
No call. Yeah. They said they would call us when it was time.
We were going to try to do a little work on Senate Bill 404, which is the how to get paid for a judge not only while you work but also after hours.
All right, you're on 404.
Who did?
Oh, thanks.
He walked out in the hall. You might find out where he went.
They got a call before closing argument. Oh, I doubt that. I don't know. I just said make sure they call us so you can come down and vote.
We should talk to Ramona.
Yeah. Last I talked to somebody who was next to Ramona. I assume she heard.
I'm going to ask them to call us before Fred's closing. Just because I personally need to hear it. I don't. Ray, you have a problem with that?
Call before his closing?
I asked them to call before.
Oh, you call. What you do is you have them call you when he starts. Is what you're going to have to be down there for. And they have to have the call before he closes to have everyone down there to hear it.
You don't want to do it then that way?
No, that's the way they have to do it. The call goes out before he starts his closing.
Not always.
What?
Yeah,
you almost have to.
It can be any time before the call.
Yeah.
He could have closed.
You want to be down to vote for that too, don't you?
Hmm?
You want to be down to vote on that too, don't you?
Who was that? Chair, is this a slam dunkaroo here? Ray? 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 Hello, Ray?
Yo! No, no. The main reason it's not is it has a, we have a policy, a serious policy issue here. Whether these judges should be allowed to go outside of their work because they're judges and charge fees for marriages. One judge made $5,000 doing this advocately, actively, on the side, and where we are banning our own honorariums. I think we have to look closely at whether we're going to let officials who are getting paid $60,000 plus a year wander about charging people in his official capacity outside of the courtroom, outside of his day.
Go get your dad.
On the weekend at $100 a pot.
I can guess. You want to do the bar bill?
Well, what the guy is going to do, Pat Hearn, who's not here now.
I don't know. Well, I'm not sure that's necessarily it. Sir. I know. You'd have to ask his eminence. See, we have just... Yeah. Yo, Raymond. 1199 is one paragraph done and out of here. Slinking around in the back.
1199, can we do 1199? 1, 2, 2, 3, 4, 4. Where'd Clark go?
I don't know.
Five.
We might need 6 given Representative Edmondson's tendencies.
1199?
Might.
What's 1199?
It's letting somebody off the hook on liability, but I don't think. Let me ask if he's okay on it.
Good guess, sir.